I am a grateful and enthusiastic member of the Al-Anon family groups. My name is Richard Estes. And I'm an emotional member of the Al-Anon family groups tonight. I've talked a lot in the past about how this has been my favorite moment in the year. Feeling a little bit like a kid on Christmas morning. Because we're about to unwrap an incredible present. I didn't, up until about a half an hour ago, I didn't think that I was going to be allowed to do this year. And I guess I am. So I want to introduce you to our kickoff speaker. When we're looking for a kickoff speaker for this event, we're looking for somebody who has energy and enthusiasm and talks about the tools of this program in a way that makes them real and available to us. And I first met David at his home group, which he and I share a sponsor. So I've been to that group a couple of times, and I can tell you it's populated by guys who are enthusiastic and passionate about this program. And that's really what David brings to the table for me, is that he is a guy who he's witty as hell. No pressure, David, but don't prove me wrong. He's enthusiastic, and he has a passion for this program and this fellowship that seems to happen to guys who hang out with Jack C. And with that, I would like to call my brother, David Kay, up to speak.
Thank you so much, Richard. When people compliment me like that, I just feel like you don't say enough. And get some housekeeping out of the way. My name is David Knox. I'm a very grateful and enthusiastic member of Al-Anon. Thank you.
Hi, David.
I'm sure if you're new, that just pleases you to no end. That I'm grateful to be here. I'm sure that just thrills you so much. I have to do what I think I have to do every time I speak, and I just humor me. I have to invite my higher power in the room. My higher power is a gentleman, and gentlemen don't come where they're not invited, and they don't stay where they're not made to be feel welcome. So if you could just bear with me, if you could just bow your head for about 10 seconds, I just want to invite him into the room. All right, thanks. So we know who to blame now if I do a bad job. Thank you, Richard, for asking me to do this. It's an honor and privilege to, it's kind of an inconvenience to do something for Al-Anon. I got to Al-Anon the first time at 13 years old. I'm Irish and Sicilian, which probably qualifies me for Al-Anon right away. Just right off the bat, you know, I didn't kind of really have a shot once I was born. I got the one side of the family, and they're part of the IRA, which is the Irish Raging Alcoholics. And I got to the other side of the family, and they're the part of the CIA. They're the crazy Italian alcoholics. And by the time I needed Alateen at the ripe old age of 13 years old, I needed a nap. And went to my first Alateen meeting. Is there anybody in here who had been to Alateen before? Awesome, Sarah. I know Sarah from Alateen. It's so rad, you know. And I want to thank also, too, my friends from PA for coming up. Or coming down, right?
Yeah.
Coming down. All right, cool. I'm coming, you know, coming down. I just really appreciate you guys. And it's just so awesome to see Luke and Sarah and Pat and Deb and Bill. It's just so rad. Like, thank you so much. And I just talked here at the Prince Albert Roundup in May, so it's just, it's an honor to get to do something for Al-Anon. A commitment that I think is actually kind of like not a really big deal. I think that the people who are the people who really deserve the most applause in this room are the people who are on the committee. And if you're anything like the people in my area, the people on the committee are the people who are kind of like the rock stars of Al-Anon. You know, they really love Al-Anon so much that they're willing to do something for it. And I'm sure there's no amount of feedback that some people want to give you about how they can do it better. If you have suggestions for them to do it better, perhaps next year you could be on the committee. And anyway, I started in Alateen. I didn't get the only gift I really got at Alateen was a girlfriend. That was the only thing I really wanted. I went to Alateen, and I walked into my first Alateen meeting. My dad drove me drunk to that meeting. What the circumstances of were him driving me drunk to the Alateen meeting is dad drove drunk everywhere. Dad was a better driver when he was drunk probably than when he's sober. And was a lot more careful and, you know, didn't speed, you know, because he didn't want to attract any attention to himself. And he used to do that one hand, the eye, and drive. You know, he would do this and when he drove. He drove me to my first Alateen meeting, and the circumstances of what brought me to my first Alateen meeting was something really weird happened in my family, and what happened was is my oldest sister got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and in my family she was looked at upon as a quitter, like you just didn't give alcohol enough a try, and. And what happened was is she joined the ranks of Alcoholics Anonymous, and she started to dress like a lady, and she started to behave like a lady. And she was 21 years old when she got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she got sober down in Laguna Beach, which is like a kind of a hoity-toity area of Southern California. Now, I grew up kind of in a bad area, so like the fact that she got sober in Laguna Beach, you know, my mom saw that as like, that's attractive. Like she's in this hoity-toity area and there's these sober people and they're willing to help her. And she's starting to dress like a lady and she's not doing non-habit forming cocaine anymore. And she's not ending up in jail anymore. Things are really, really good, you know? And my sister, it's so funny, she'll tell her story sometime and she says that the reason why she got her first DUI is because when the highway patrolman pulled her over, they asked her what freeway was she on, and she guessed wrong. So that, in a nutshell, is kind of the alcoholism I grew up in. We just, you know, my family drank, and I was embarrassed. And what happened was my sister got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, and my mom saw that example and just kind of said, huh. And I think that's the most valuable thing that we say just before we're about to come into the program is, huh. And she got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous 90 days later. And, you know, real surprising to us, my mom stopped drinking and stopped doing non-habit-forming speed. And she did non-habit-forming speed for about 30 years. And, you know, mom was real quick around the house. And It's really funny. In the house I grew up in, my mom did like all these like drugs that made her go faster. And our house was just a mess all the time. We had clothes mountain in one of the rooms where it was just loads of laundry that had been cleaned and not folded and put away. So like if you needed to go through a sock, you were like Jacques Cousteau, you know, or more like Sock Cousteau. And, you know, you would go through this like pile and just try to find matching socks. And we had shag carpeting from the 70s. And like it was cool in the 70s. But like if you're in an alcoholic home, it just becomes dreadlocked, you know. You know, that's what happens to shag carpeting because you spill stuff on it. And you're just like, oh, well, it must be God's will. I'm not picking that up, you know. And so what happens in my family is my mom and my sister kind of engage in this miracle. and they're sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And my mom joined the right-wing death squad group of Alcoholics Anonymous. She joined the Bellflower Big Book group. It's a group that is very correct. They're sober correctly in that group. And if you're not sober correctly like them in that group, you're not as sober as they are. And so is there anyone in here who's sober and correct? There's no sober correct people here? Because welcome to Al-Anon if you are. And what happened was my mom went to the sober correct group and she got a sober correct sponsor. And the sober correct sponsor had a daughter, and the daughter was their chairperson for SCAC. SCAC is the Southern California Alateen Conference. And I fall into this Alateen group with that kind of pedigree of my sponsor, you know, my mom's sponsor's daughter is the chairperson for SCAC. And I go into the Alateen meeting, and Alateen was like foisted upon me. There was no choice. Like, you had to go. My mom said, you don't have a choice. Like, you have to go to school, and you don't like doing that, so you got to go to Alateen. And I was like, well, Mom, I don't go to school. I ditched that, too. And so I go to the Alateen meeting, and I don't really get a lot out of the Alateen meeting, except there was some pretty girls in that Alateen meeting. And I was like, wow, look at the depressed one. I like her. I confuse that with deep and complicated. Not depressed and probably on drugs, but just deep. And what she needed was to love me. So that's what she needed, you know? And she had a Cure shirt on. I was like, hell, she's depressed. Good, you know? We're match made in heaven, you know? And I got a phone list that night. And I called her during the week, you know, and she didn't really want what I had, you know. And I was like, geez, man, what's a guy got to do to get a girlfriend around here, you know? And then next week I came, and this next one came, and she was angry. Just angry. Something I like to call passionate. You know? And she was just perfect, you know? Combat boots and just mad, you know? Perfect for me. And she was my her with a capital H, just my her, you know. And if you have a her with a capital H, welcome to Al-Anon. You know. All right, Richard, good to be awesome, you know. And and she became my her, you know. And you know, the fact that she did drugs didn't really matter to David, you know, that was just something we were just going to have to deal with, you know, that she and if she just loved me enough, she would just not do drugs anymore because I'm witty. Thank you, Richard. And I'm charming and I'm funny and nice, and I'll love her enough to where she just doesn't do drugs anymore. And what happened is she just continued to do drugs. And what happened, as it happens in relationships that are like that, is she found a boyfriend who did drugs. And I was like, okay, bye. And, you know, and I just tried to do, I didn't get a thing out of Alateen except that, where are you going, Tammy? I'm not done yet. It's rude in Canada, you know, and I thought you guys were pleasant and polite up here. Just walk out of my talk, you know. I'm sure other people are feeling, I want to walk out of here so bad. But what you think of me is none of my business. So what happened was I didn't really get much out of Alateen except her. And what's weird is why I didn't get anything out of Alateen is because I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't work the steps. I compared and didn't identify. And I do what guys like me do, is I judge my way at Alateen. I judge my way out of Alateen before I find out what it's really about. And if there's anyone in here tonight who's judging their way out of the room, who's leaving Al-Anon one judgment at a time, I'd like to talk to you after the meeting. I'd really like to talk to you after the meeting. And what happened was I tried to do life as best I could. My mom and sister were sober, really active members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it didn't, I'd like to say it made me happier, but it really didn't. What it kind of made me go is, well, all right, Dad, perhaps you should follow suit. And what happened was, is my dad just continued to drink. And he continued to drink, and he continued to drink really, actually more heavy after my mom and my sister got sober. And what happened was, is came up with the solution. And the solution was that if I just kill myself, my dad will get sober. If I just kill myself, my dad will get sober. Or what I'll do is I'll scare him enough to where he'll get sober. And I attempted suicide for the first time in my life at 14. And I was going to a therapist at the time, and the therapist said, we should probably put you in some kind of treatment facility for kids who have depression. And I got put in that facility, and my mom and my dad both came to admit me. And my mom, newly sober, was so concerned about me. So concerned about her son. What, you know, like, what is it that we can do to get him well? And my dad, also just as concerned as she was. Just as concerned. And my dad was a very, very quiet man. He didn't talk a lot. And it's interesting. He was very, very smart and very, very, had a great command of the English language, but never spoke. And my therapist asked my father, one of the reasons why your son is so depressed is because of your drinking. Have you ever thought about stopping drinking? And with tears in his eyes, he just shook his head no. And by that time in my life, I just said, why'd you even ask him? Because what had happened for me was that I found the solution to depression for a guy like me, and I found resentment. At that point forward, I just kind of baptized myself in this feeling of, I would rather hate than hurt. And I just turned on the hate immediately as soon as he left that hospital. And I lied my way through that treatment program. I'm really, really good at looking good and following the rules. And what I did was I looked good and followed the rules while I was in that depression treatment program. And what happened was, is I left that program, and I tried to do life as best I could. And life as best I could on a good day is me sleeping 15 hours a day. That's life as best as I could do. And what happened was, is one day I come home from school. It's the summer between my freshman and sophomore year, and I come home from summer school. No, really, I'm a bad kid. I was in summer school. No, I know that's just shock for somebody who grew up in alcoholism that they would be in summer school. And I was in summer school. We called it bummer school. And showed up at home, and everything that my dad owned was gone. He just left, no note, nothing. And what happened was, is I just felt a twinge of sadness come over me and thought, I wonder what I did to chase him out of the house. And it was immediately replaced with, who needs him? Get out. You know, and what happened was, is I just basically wrote my dad off. And what happened in my family and what happened to me was, I just tried to do life as best I could. And I started to judge people who didn't behave the way I saw fit. And what happened is, slowly and surely, what happened was, I wasn't behaving the way I saw fit. And I started to turn the focus on myself and really just start beating myself up for not being perfect. And it was really, really confusing to me when I came into Al-Anon, because I wasn't a perfectionist when I got to Al-Anon. I was a slob. I was a total slob. I was like, perfectionist, that's a lot of work. You know, I'll let other people do that, you know. And what happened was, is I had these really, really grand schemes, like just that I was going to become like an attorney. I was going to become very powerful someday. And when I became very powerful someday, all of this stuff wouldn't matter. And what happened was, is I don't know what happened. It wasn't like, there wasn't like an impetus like that really made me decide like I should probably go back to Al-Anon. I was 17 years old. I had a mohawk, a leather jacket, flannel wrapped around my waist and jeans and combat boots on, and I went to an Al-Anon meeting. I don't know why I went to an Al-Anon meeting. I think my mom was starting to really drive me crazy, is why I went to an Al-Anon meeting. It's like because my mom wanted to know where I was. She wanted to like know how I was feeling, and it was so like, what do you want? What did you do with my mom? You know, like, what did you want? And I would go. I went to this Al-Anon meeting, and this Al-Anon meeting, the average age in the room was deceased, and I'm 17, and I have a mohawk. I'm a punk. I look like a punk rocker, and I walk in, and I'm like, oh great, you know. And I sit down, and this lady goes, are you looking for AA? It was not funny. I was offended by the accusation, and I think I was like, lady, how dare you? You want me to go to something as stupid as AA? How dare you? But I think how it came out was, no, I need this room. And I sat down in the Al-Anon meeting, and they talked, and it was like seven women who were much older than me talking about their husbands, you know, and the meeting didn't start on time, which really upset me. It really upset me. If you're late, it bothers me. If I'm late, you just have to accept it, you know, but if you're late, it really bothers me. And I was like, I guess the topic's punctuality tonight, you know, and what happened was, I basically kind of stood up in the meeting and said, are we going to have a meeting? Because I need a lot of help. Like, my mom's sober, my dad, who cares, and my sister's sober, and I'm not happy. I need a lot of help. I'm angry when I don't want to be, like in that moment when you're late. And I'm miserable at 17 years old. And they do a bunch of readings. I don't relate to any of the readings because I'm still looking for all the differences in the room. I'm looking about how all these women are married to alcoholic husbands, and I'm like, why would you marry someone, first of all? And why would you marry an alcoholic? You just chose poorly. You know, like, I got a solution. Why don't you leave him? No more meeting. We're done. You know? Good. You know, just leave him. Good. Meeting's over. All right, cool. Break. You know? And, so then they read all that stuff, and then they had a break. Yeah. Like a reward, horrible behavior. You were already late, and you get a break now? You were already late. No break. But I want these people to like me, so I just sat there, stewing. And, you know, just really mad. And the break went too long for my liking. We were supposed to have a 7-minute break. Some of you are nodding. Uh-oh, keep coming back. And it was a 20-minute break. And finally, I think I just stood up and was like, what the hell is this stuff? Like, are we going to have a meeting or not? And they said, well, we're going to have a meeting in a second. Why don't you just sit down? And I was like, we started late. No thanks to you. And we had a 20-minute break, and I haven't heard anything. I need a lot of help. And I just was like, I'm leaving. And I walked out the room thinking that Al-Anon had nothing for me to nothing to offer a guy like me. And I went over to AA. And I saw a guy who was dressed like I was dressed. So he's obviously the president of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was standing at a podium, and he was telling people what to do. And I like people who tell people what to do. I think people who tell what people what to do care. You know, and they obviously know the plight. And I want to be one of the guys who tell people what to do someday. So I like that guy, you know. And I walk up to him, and I think he's the president of AA, obviously. Found out later he was kind of like the Führer, but I started to talk to him, and I said, I think I'm an alcoholic. And his eyes got real big. If you say that to someone in AA, like, I think I'm an alcoholic, their eyes will get big. And they'll go, oh, really? what makes you think you're an alcoholic? And I go, well, I go to AA meetings with my mom. And I hear you guys talk, and I relate to all of it. I relate to every feeling because I'm listening really intently in AA meetings because I need to know stuff so that I can later then tell my mom what to do. Because she really needs to work step nine. That's what we really need her to do is work step nine and lots of money and free time. That's what I need as my step nine. Her step nine should have been give David $1,000. That's what her step nine should have been, I thought. And he goes, well, when was the last time you drank? All inquisitive and concerned. When was the last time you drank? I said, about 3 years ago, I think. And he looked at me like perplexed, like a lot of you are looking at me right now. And he just said, well, perhaps you should drink more. And it wasn't funny at the time, but at the time I was like, oh, that might bring me relief. No, you know? So I left and judged my way out of Al-Anon again. And what happened was at 19, I got a call that I was living, you know, at my mom's house because she was holding me back. You know, I was totally living at home, you know, and was living at home and I got a call, and the call was, hey, it's rehab. It's the Charlie Street Rehab in Costa Mesa. It's a great place where people go. I mention it by name because it saved my dad's life. And my dad was living on the street by the time he got sober, and he called my sister. And he said, I drink when I don't want to. At 6 a.m, I swear I won't drink, and I'm drunk by 8. And what happened was he got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they called me and said, we're going to have family day. Why don't you come on down? Your dad would love to see you. And the most compassionate kind thing I could say back was, he lost his shot, and I hung up the phone. And at 19 years old, I was dangerously antisocial. I was consumed with resentment, just consumed with it. I thought that resentment would motivated me to be, I thought it really motivated me. But I was still living at home. And if you would have pointed that out, I'd have laughed. I'd have been like, well, you know, mom's holding me back. I have to stay here, you know? I know as soon as I become an attorney, I'll walk out of here. I just thought you went down somewhere and they just made you an attorney. Like, I didn't know anything about work, you know, or school or anything like that. I was to last like that for 3 more years, just pathetically hard. And guys like me are so hard that they shatter easily. What happens by the time I get to Al-Anon, I'm sleeping 15 hours a day. Because being hard does, it's exhausting. Being hard's exhausting. And what happens is I'm always asleep. And what happens is I get another call at the house. You know, I'm living at mom's house rent free. A real vision for you, you know, a real man at 22. And I'm just miserable. And I live there rent free. And I answer the phone in her house the way guys like me answer the phone in people's house that I live rent free. And I say, what? That's how I answer the phone. What? You know, just absolutely no respect for her at all. You know, and I answer the phone, and it's a hospital. And they say, we want you to come down. Your father's had a stroke. And we don't know how much longer he's going to live. And I was out of plans that day. And I want to welcome anyone who's here tonight who's out of plans. We hope that you're out of plans. We want to know your plan if you're not out of plan. If you're not out of plans, we want to know your plan. I'm sure it's a good one. I'm sure it's like a one more heist to set yourself up for recovery plan or something fun. We want to know the plan, you know, and please tell us your plan. We love it. I think that should be a piece of literature, is newcomer plans. I really do. I would love that. I would love that as a literature, newcomer plans. She's going to come back properly ashamed of herself. Yeah. Yeah. All right, buddy. Cool. We hear that plan a lot at my home group, that she's going to come back properly ashamed of herself, and she's going to behave. And the next day I went to Al-Anon. I don't know why I went to Al-Anon. I thought, like, I had the experience in Al-Anon that Al-Anon has nothing to offer for a guy who's not married to an alcoholic woman. And I walked into the Monday Night Cerritos meeting. The Monday Night Cerritos meeting is the meeting that it's the New Way of Life group. Jamie goes to that meeting. And I walked into that meeting, and I saw two people who transitioned from Alateen to Al-Anon in that meeting. And they saw me walk in the door, and one of them I had gone to high school with for about 2 weeks until I got kicked out on a trumped up charge of vandalism or something. And she saw me and she walked up to me and she said, duh. Probably the best newcomer welcome in Al-Anon. Duh. And if you don't know what duh means in Alateen, what duh means is you shouldn't have left. That's what it means. And I just went to the room and I sat in the back of the room and I heard some readings that night. I heard Understanding Ourselves read in our meeting. And it said that, you know, some of us are arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominating. And I looked around the room and thought, yeah, some of us are. And I knew exactly who was arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominating in the meeting within minutes. And by the way, if you need to point out who's arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominating, you probably have it. And what happened was I just started going to that meeting. I started going to lots of meetings. Like, I just started going to lots of meetings, and there's people in that meeting who were so nice to me. God has a really, really great sense of humor. There was a man in that meeting whose father drank with my father for 30 years. He walked up to me and said, I'm really glad to see you here. That lady from Alateen was in that meeting. There was lots of people in that meeting who really loved me and were so eager to talk to me. You know, in that meeting, they really understood our traditions. And in that meeting, they really understood that the newcomer is the most important person in the room. They understood in that meeting that the leader certainly, or the speaker is not, that the newcomer is. And that when I came into that room, people were so happy to see me. There was a man in that room who told me about a men's stag meeting. And men's stag meetings, I was like, there's a lot of men there, right? It didn't sound really appealing to me when he said, let's go to a men's stag meeting. I was like, but there's men there and I'm a boy. You know, and my family, it's really funny. I'm almost 40 and I'm still called the boy in my family. And then I react with, no, I'm not. And I have more maturity in my little finger than you have in your whole body, you know? And they just kind of prove that I'm the boy. And I just proved it too, you know? And, what happens is I get introduced to you guys, and I fall in love. You know, and that culmination of desperation and your love just comes into my life. And what happens is I start going to as many meetings as I possibly can. I'm not working. No, really. they say we want you to go to 6 meetings to decide whether or not Al-Anon is for you. And then I also heard in other groups, when I was a newcomer, I went to 30 meetings in 30 days. And I was like, ooh. And I'm like, I'm not working. I'll go to 60 meetings in 30 days. I'll go to one in the mid-morning, because I'm not going to get up that early. And I'll go to one in the evening, too. And I'll just start chasing this thing, because I need it desperately. I need it desperately. My dad's dying, and I feel so responsible. And what happens is, did someone just sneeze? This is nothing to sneeze at up here. Trying to be honest. I don't have to start all over again. And what happened was I just started going to meetings. And I went to a meeting on Wednesday night in Long Beach. It's a 7:30 meeting. It used to be at Palo Verde and Willow at the Teddy Bear Church. And they called it the Teddy Bear Group. And I went to that meeting and I saw a guy in the meeting, and he was telling people what to do. And boy, I wanted what he had. And he was like a real arrogant guy in Al-Anon, and he was just like pushing people around and like putting his finger in his chest. And I was like, oh, wow, an authority. And he walked up to me and said, I'll be your sponsor until you have the self-worth to pick one. You know, and I went, oh, good. I don't have to work my program. I'll have a sponsor tell me what to do. I'll have someone tell me what to do, and then I don't have to risk anything. I don't have to find my higher power because it's been appointed by divine inconvenience through my sponsor. So I don't have to have a higher power. So I'll make his approval my higher power. And what'll happen, no one relates to that at all, I'm sure. And what happened was I had this sponsor who just kind of told me what to do for my first year. And I got out, he goes, you need to get out of yourself and you need to get a lot of commitments. And I was like, oh, yes, sir. You know, I'll get a lot of commitments. And I started getting all these commitments at meetings. And I thought that the people in Al-Anon for a long time in my program, the people who told people what to do, I thought my program knew better. And what I found is that the mean people in Al-Anon who were telling people what to do, what I found out later is they're mean. That's all I found out is they're mean, but they're welcomed here. They're so welcome here. They need this program as bad as I do. And what happened was is that first sponsor walked me through the death of my dad. And that sponsor started walking me through the steps. And what happened was is at 3.5 years, I fell in love in Al-Anon. I fell in love with a woman who loved me, who just adored me. And I really hated her for it. And I just really was like, how can you love me? How dare you? And what happened was I called my mean sponsor of record that night because I needed to talk to someone who was mean to set me straight, you know, to really like shake me through the phone and tell me, you know, what was wrong with me. And I called my mean sponsor of record that night. And I said, hi, I don't know what to do and I'm all messed up. And he says, you're really sick. And he hung up. And I was like, well, I know I'm really sick. I have 6 commitments in a week. I'm really sick. I know I'm really sick. I've been coming to Al-Anon for 3.5 years, and I do all this stuff. I know I'm sick. I have you as a sponsor. I know I'm sick. And you remind me if I'm not... You remind me if I forget how sick I am. And what happens is I go to a Friday night meeting I go to. This Friday night meeting is an Alcoholics Anonymous Al-Anon meeting, and it's not conference approved, and uh-oh, you know, and none of us really are, but this meeting's not conference approved. And what happened was is I go in that meeting, and I see a guy that I'd known for a long time in Al-Anon, and he's a great guy. He's a single father. He rides a motorcycle, and he's got a really loving relationship with his kid, and he's an Alateen sponsor. And he's just a really enthusiastic, grateful, and funny member of Al-Anon. He's just funny. And we were in a meeting one night, and this woman was the chip person. And she dropped a chip on the floor. And she goes, where is it? And it had fallen under a chair, and she couldn't find it. And he goes, it's on your shoulder. And he's just a funny guy, you know? And I sit next to him in meetings, and he says really funny stuff to me during the meeting. And they were reading the Just for Today pamphlet, and it says that it's true what Abraham Lincoln said, that most people are as happy as they make up their mind to be. And he leans over to me and he goes, they shot him. And somebody understands. Somebody understands that happy people bother me, you know? And I think happy people aren't as smart as I am. And, you know, they just can't see what's wrong, you know, and they just need some help in finding out what's wrong. And at 3.5 years, I see this guy in a meeting, and my sponsor just got done beating me up, and I share in the meeting, I'm in a relationship with a woman who loves me, and I don't understand it. I'm so scared to let her love me. I'm so scared, and she loves me, and I just don't know what to do. And I called my sponsor, and I told my sponsor, you know, what was going on in the relationship. What happened was, is I cut my finger, and she did something really loving for me. She dressed it. And I didn't know how to handle that. And this man walked up to me after the meeting and said, hey, David, how are you? I was like, well, you can tell by my share I'm not doing so hot. You know, pretty miserable, actually. And he goes, okay, interesting choice. Yeah, interesting choice. And he goes, David, no one can shame you into better thinking, not even a sponsor. So that's not the kind of work that we do in Al-Anon. And he goes, and not all that shaming can restore you to sanity. And a light bulb went off. And what happened was I found a man who was going to sponsor me. And he was going to be nice to me and treat me with respect and introduce me to a God who's crazy about me. He's not going to say that human power through sponsorship is going to restore you to sanity. He's going to say, we're going to introduce you to a God who's crazy about you, you know, and he's got really good taste. And what happened was, I asked that man to sponsor me, and he said it would be my pleasure. And I think that's the answer that you give. I think that's the answer that you give. The answer that you give when you sponsor, when someone says to you, would you sponsor me? You say it would be my pleasure. Even if you think you don't have time, you say it would be my pleasure. And what happened was this guy introduced me to, he just said, okay, there's a men's retreat coming up in 3 weeks. The guys I sponsor go, let's go. And I was like, I don't want to go to a men's retreat. There's men there. Retreating, no. And I'm not gonna retreat. That sounds, like sensitive guys do that, you know? And I don't wanna go on a retreat. And he goes, well, I know you don't want to, but let's go. And he said, I said, and this is a big excuse I used when I don't have the money. And he goes, oh. He goes, can you come up with half of it? And I was like, yeah. So I came up with the $45 and we went. And we went, you know, and I went to this retreat. Sorry, I'm from Long Beach. When people come near me, what do you want, you know? She's little, but I think I can take her. And what happened was we went on this men's retreat. And at that men's retreat, he gave me my assignment for what the first step was going to be for me. He says, I want you to write down all the ways you try to control people. All of them. He's all, do you pout? Yeah. Only when I want to evoke sympathy. You know, sympathy is kind of like love. It's kind of like love. But I still have control in it when you feel sympathy for me. I still have control there. When you love me, then you can take it away. So what happened was he asked me to continue to write all these things I do to try to control people. What are some of the things that you do? Do you resent? I was like, yeah, big time. And he said, okay, well, let's write down this list. And he says, in the next column, we're going to write a list of how does that make your life unmanageable? You know, and basically all that shows me is I end up right and alone. That's what ends up happening to a guy like me is I end up right and alone. And if you're in Al-Anon and you're right and alone, I want to welcome you. And if you're right and alone and you have time in Al-Anon, I want to welcome you. If you're right and no one wants to be around you and you've been in Al-Anon a long time, there's a room for you here. You know, you can just admit that you're right and alone. You know, what happened was I got this wonderful sponsor. I got this just wonderful sponsor. And what happened was he introduced me to a higher power. And how he introduced me to that higher power is through the steps and what he said to me. David, is I want you to write down everybody you love in Al-Anon and why you love them. Everyone you love in Al-Anon. It's a lot of people. You know, when you're as active in Al-Anon as I am and you do so much stuff above the group level as I do, I know a lot of people in Al-Anon. And he says, I want you to write down all their names and why you love them. And there was, you know, George, he's like the grandpa I never had. Just wrote all these names down. And he says, okay, now we're going to practice principles above personalities, and we're going to take away the names. That's your God, not the one that's in your head. So can you turn your will and your life over to the care of that God? Can you make that decision right now to turn your will and your life over to the care of that God? So yeah, it'd be simple. And he goes, okay, well, let's do it. And we read this prayer together out of this book, and we did the form, we did the prayer, and it was the formal terms of surrender for me. And then he introduced me to the thing that I think in Al-Anon is so funny. We did an inventory, and it's so funny in Al-Anon, there's a lot of oogada boogada about the inventory. Like, oh no, not an inventory. Like it's so funny. It's like, it's all stuff I've done. It's not like that big a deal. It's all stuff I carry around. Like, I think the only thing when people say, oh no, not an inventory, are usually the people who haven't done one, you know, like inventory is a great thing. Like, it's better than not doing one and doing everyone else's. I mean, trust me, hell, I've done that, you know, for too long, you know, in Al-Anon in the three and a half years, I'd done that for too long. And what happened was, is he walked me through this inventory, and I did this inventory and I read it to him. It took me 42 hours to read my fifth step to this guy. And he listened patiently, and he listened to every silly resentment that I had. And he didn't judge me, and he laughed when I told him stuff. And he goes, yeah, me too. And he goes, yeah, I did that too. And then he told me some stuff that he'd done, and I felt like I needed to take a shower. I mean, after some of the stuff he told me he did, I was like, ugh. I said, jeez, no wonder your wife drank. Ugh, you know, and that's disgusting, man. I'd never even thought of that, let alone done it. And then when I did it later, I told him about it, you know. And he goes, yeah, I did that too. Yeah. Same reason, you know. Did your chicken die, you know? And as the old joke goes, and what happened was, is I just started working the program, and I started getting better in the program. And I started to get like a lot of levity in my life, and I started to get a lot of joy. And what happened in my program is, I started to be of service in a whole different way. And what happened was I became an Alateen sponsor. And what happened was, is I, guys like me who grew up in the family I did, there's probably not a better commitment for a guy like me. And I became an Alateen sponsor. And I went to become an Alateen sponsor, and I fell in love with those kids. I fell in love with those kids. And I see the kids walk in the room, and I say, hey, how are you? And you could just tell that they're just so mad. They're so mad about something, and they just go, fine. And then I say to them, well, you should probably tell your face. And then they just laugh. And then they tell me what's really going on, you know? And what happened was, is I was an Alateen sponsor for 9 years, and being an Alateen sponsor for 9 years will give you actually a lot of resentments is actually what it'll give you. And I became like a super Alateen sponsor. And what happened was, is their welfare became more important than my welfare. And what happened was, is there were some guidelines that were passed in Al-Anon, and I got really mad at Al-Anon. And I got really mad at Al-Anon in Al-Anon. And what happened was, sooner or later, is I start judging my way out of Al-Anon. And what happens is I become a correct member of Al-Anon. And if you're a correct member of Al-Anon, welcome to Al-Anon. I love using the service manual as a weapon. I got so sick in that period when I became right, and my sponsor would not talk to me about it. Not that he was like, I can't talk to you about it. He would not pull my covers. And my sponsor just sat back and watched. And when I got on the other side of that, I said, why wouldn't you pull my covers? And he goes, David, they're yours. When you want to kick them off, you'll kick them off. But they're your covers. They're no one else's. The resentment is no one else's responsibility. Is the event your fault? Not really, but the resentment is always my fault. Always. And what happened was, is I was going to half a meeting a week, whether I needed it or not. And I was going to that half AA, half Al-Anon meeting, and I told my sponsor, like, he goes, how many meetings are you going to a week right now? I said, I'm going to Friday night. And he goes, oh, that's half a meeting. So you're going to half a meeting, whether you need it or not. And I was like, yeah. And what happened was, is about this time, something really crummy happened to my family. What happened was, my mom drank again. And she had 14 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she drank. And she did what alcoholics do. They drink. And what happened was, is I internalized it, and subconsciously, somewhere in my sick thinking, I just thought of something and it became true. And I blamed Al-Anon for my mom drinking, and I blamed Al-Anon for the Alateen stuff, and I got really scary and mean and Al-Anon it, you know, and I was going to half a meeting, like I said, and what happened was is a guy that I really respect in Alcoholics Anonymous said something to me one night. He said, yeah, what happens to a guy like me is I hit bottom, and the first thing I get back is my opinion. And he basically just like right between the eyes just got me, you know. And what happened is I called my sponsor and turned myself in, and you know, he told me the stuff about my covers, and he told me the stuff about, well, it sounds like you have a resentment. And he says, this isn't Well Persons Anonymous, David. You're gonna be let down by people in Al-Anon. It's okay. And what happened was is we had a really great relationship. We had a really, really great relationship. And recently, like within the past year, I went through a sponsorship change, and it was so hard because I knew I needed a new sponsor for about 2 years. For about 2 years, I just knew I needed something different in my life. And it wasn't him. It was just something that I needed to do. And what happened was is at that time, I recommitted to Al-Anon, and I joined a correct group of Al-Anon. And this correct group of Al-Anon does it correctly. And if you don't do it as well as them, then you're not correct. And so you're going to Al-Anon, but you're not really going to Al-Anon. So what happened was I was part of the correct group. And I love correct groups of Al-Anon. I just love them. I love to talk at correct groups of Al-Anon and talk about this stuff, because you can see that they just go, oh, God, we're a correct group of Al-Anon. You know, or they go, God, I hate this speaker, you know, and kind of like some of you right now. But like I said, what you think of me is none of my business. So what happened was is I go to this meeting. I go to the correct group, and I was sharing with a friend, with Sarah, who's a great friend of mine, about why I left the correct group. A lady came to the podium to take her cake, and at that group, it's the group conscience that gentlemen dress like this when they take their cake, and ladies wear dresses. It's their group conscience. It's not a tradition. It's just a custom of that group. And in that group, that's what they do. And the lady came up to take her cake, and she had 34 years in Al-Anon, and she was comfortable wearing jeans and a t-shirt. That's what she was comfortable in. And that's what her higher power said, you can wear this to a meeting. It's none of our business. You know, it's not anything about what we wear in Al-Anon. Like, who cares? It's like how you treat people is what makes you a good Al-Anon member. And she came up and took her cake, and people were like so mad that some people actually walked out of the meeting. And I was like, I don't know what's going on in that lady's personal life, but maybe she can't afford a dress. And I just like Richard's looking at me right now. That's what I did. I just went, what? And what happened was I just was like, I don't like this. And what happened was is a lady who's a friend of mine, she's from the same town that I'm from. And I'm from Long Beach, California. No, I don't know Snoop Dogg. And I sat down, and what happened was is we just like sat there both kind of like in shock. And then we came back the next week, and a lady came up to the podium and made amends for that woman not wearing a dress. And yeah, exactly. Like, ugh. Like, I need a shower. That's so weird, you know? Like, ew, like a Silkwood shower, like scrub me. This is so weird, you know? And I went up to my friend, and my friend said, I'm not coming back here anymore. And I said, yeah, this doesn't feel like Al-Anon to me. What people wear is none of my business, you know? And what happened was is I tried to find another home group. I was looking for a Thursday night meeting, and I was just looking. I was like, I need to go to a Thursday night meeting that is enthusiastic and fun and really respects Al-Anon and loves it. And what happened was my phone rang, as it does when I ask God for something. What happens is my phone rang. And what happened was a guy called me. A guy that I saw come in as a newcomer called me, named Sleeveless Steve. And Sleeveless Steve was a bouncer. What a perfect job for an Al-Anon. What a great job for, you know, what's funny is he's not the first Al-Anon I've met who's been a bouncer. And I know many Al-Anons who are bouncers and bartenders. It's so funny. And what happened was he was a bouncer, and I saw him when he came in Allen. He was about 6'8", so he's kind of petite, and just a big dude. And he just called me and he goes, "Is this David?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Nothing. What are you doing?" And he goes, "Want to be a speaker?" And I was like, "No." That's always my first thought. No, I don't want to be a speaker. No, you know, and but, you know, you never turn down an Allen request. That sponsor that I had, that wonderful sponsor, said, if someone ever says to you, gives you havoc about you saying no to an Allen request, say to them, what is the quality of my yes if I cannot say no? And he says, if you want to feel apart from, say no all the time. But if you want to feel a part of, say yes when you can. But if you have another commitment, you can't. And what happened was, is I said yes because I didn't have another. I couldn't come up with a lie to get me out of it, essentially. And I just wanted to go. I wanted to go to this meeting and speak there. It was an honor and a privilege to get to ask to do something as simple as this for Al-Anon. And what happened was, I went to the Al-Anon meeting. Now my home group is the 7 o'clock Let's Rock Al-Anon Men's Stag. It is a kick-ass Al-Anon meeting. As a matter of fact, we wanted to call our meeting the kick-ass meeting, but we didn't think that they would put it in the directory. And it's a men's stag of about 95 guys a week. And I didn't know that there was that many men in Al-Anon when I first started going to that meeting. And you know, and it's so funny. I went to that meeting and I got asked to speak, and I just fell in love with that group. And now I'm the speaker getter, the speaker bookie at that meeting. And I'm not taking volunteers. Please stop. And I was talking to my friend Sarah at the before the meeting about how people will come up and volunteer to speak. And I'm like, are you kidding? You're volunteering to have a commitment that shows humility? What are you doing? You know, like, you just get asked and you go. You don't volunteer. You know, but anyway, you know, I'd like to volunteer to be like the coffee cleanup guy if I can volunteer to be anything. But at that meeting, we just have a real good time, and our home group has a website, and we put our speakers online, and we're enthusiastic and fun. We're fun. If Al-Anon wasn't fun, I would not stay here. If Al-Anon was a gray tunnel meeting where it was boring and the topic was her the whole meeting, you know, like, what can we do to make her feel ashamed about herself? If that was the topic, like, in an Al-Anon meeting, I don't think I would ever come back. Like, at that meeting, it's so funny. I was in that meeting once, and there was a guy in the meeting, and he was just totally character assassinating his wife. Just totally character assassinating his wife in the midst of his share. And the guy who was leading the meeting stopped him in the middle of his share and said, "What you'll come to find out is you picked her. Can we have someone else share?" And I fell in love with that meeting. And I'm proud to say that that's my home group, and I love that meeting. And what happened was, is I really kind of started to turn my will and my life over to care of God on a bigger level. And what happened was, is my phone started ringing, and it asked me to do really lame stuff like this in Al-Anon, you know, like inconvenient stuff like this. But it really asked me to, it showed me to do something so awesome in Al-Anon. What happened was, is I got to start to sponsor men. And that is the best gift in Al-Anon, is when you get to sit across from another man and you get to say, "Yeah, me too." When you get to sit across from another man and you get to say, "Yeah, I did this, this, and this," and then they look at you like they need a shower. You know? What's awesome in this program is I get to listen to fifth steps of men that I sponsor. And it's so funny. They're so, like, afraid and timid when they come to me and they do their fifth step. And I, you know, tell them some of the stuff that I did, and they're like, "Yeah, you too, huh? Yeah, you too." I don't think that there's any more a gift in Al-Anon by looking at another man's eyes. For me, I sponsor men, and I look into their eyes and I say, "Yeah, me too." They do it and I'm embarrassed. "Yeah, me too. My mom, dad, and sister got active in Alcoholics Anonymous and it didn't make me feel any better." And I go, "Yeah, me too." You know, and thank you this weekend for coming here and letting me do this and letting me to get to say to you, "Yeah, me too." Thank you.